Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127games.com.
Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 96. Pay What You Want with Ben Gerber. So for today's episode, folks, we are so lucky because we have the head honcho behind the Troll in the Corner podcast network. I'm talking about Mr. Ben Gerber, who not only is the head honcho here on the Troll in the Corner, but also has tons of experience as an indie games designer and publisher, and also as an amazing industry guest at area conventions such as TotalCon, which is a fantastic gaming convention in Mansfield, Massachusetts. So I want to welcome Ben with us to the show. Ben, how are you?
Good, Jonathan. Thank you for having me. You're really on episode 96?
I am. And do you know what? I have this whole sense of deja vu. Do you think the Matrix is resetting?
Just talked about this. Well, I'm only on episode 25 of my podcast. And so there. How are you?
I'm good.
Can you explain to the folks out there in listener land what just happened? Because I think they deserve an explanation.
I know this is
10 minutes late with this podcast.
This is maybe a little too meta for people, and I know some people who podcast about podcasting, if that's not meta enough, would say, no, you shouldn't talk about this stuff and release it in an episode because...
Break people, the fourth wall.
Yeah, because people don't care, and it's awful, and you just cut that out. Be like, dude, turn your mic on. No one needs to hear that or to hear, well, I didn't answer the Skype call-in because I wasn't sure if it was you, so... that no one gives a crap about it. But in this case, it's important to talk about because a lot of these interviews now that I'm doing as we get to episode 100 and past it are being done on Google. They're being done on G+ Hangouts. G+ is wonderful because it allows you to do things such as have a Hangout on air, which is a live recording that people can watch on YouTube and all that sort of stuff. But the downside to this is that if you don't click the start button, it doesn't record. Whereas with Skype, despite my problems with Skype for me anyway, automatically records as soon as I connect. So I don't need to think about it. Like Apple and all things Apple that I love, it just works. And unfortunately, Google requires someone to pay attention. Usually the host of the show to
click
the
little
button. Yeah, completely me. So... it's awful because Ben and I are chatting and we're talking about Indie Talks and how wonderful it is because Indie Talks got an Emmy nomination, which is amazing. And then lo and behold, realize I look up and see, wait a sec, that doesn't say anything about recording. That says I need to click on something because, yes, despite the fact that I've been podcasting since 2006, despite the fact that this is episode 96, and despite the fact that I've had numerous guests on here as interviewees, I haven't used G+ that often, and no matter what, I didn't click on the record button. It's awful.
Yeah, well, you know, it happens. It was only 10 minutes. We'll get it back. Don't worry. So, yeah, Indie Talks, Emmy nomination, terribly excited. Public voting starts July 22nd. It ends on my birthday, July 31st, which means that I can't think of a better birthday present than, you know, winning an Emmy. So go and vote for me.
Well, I think people are going to have to stuff that ballot box.
I think so. That would be nice. We'll see what happens.
You have a fantastic show because not only are you an indie game designer and publisher, but you're really in sync. You have your finger on the pulse of the community. So you have all these really good guests who come on to talk about all sorts of stuff. And I feel that as prevalent as the indie game community is and still remaining indie, that it's underserved in the podosphere or whatever we want to call the podcast realm.
Yeah. It's it's not all that terribly hard to get folks to come on to your show. My secret, as we discussed before we went on air, the secret to this is you got to ask them. And one of the best places I found to connect with these folks is on G+, which I've mentioned countless times on my podcast. A lot of people see it as this sort of wasteland online. It's, I believe, the second largest social media outlet for lack of a better word, going right now. And if you see it as a wasteland, it's because you have not gone out and circled people, so they don't know you're there. So if you like the John Wicks and the Jason Morningstars of the indie spectrum of game designers, go put them in your circles and start talking about their stuff and start mentioning neat things, and they'll probably circle you back and enter into a conversation with you. So, yeah, it's a huge, huge community. Like we were saying, it's so huge and so vibrant in the indie sphere that myself and fellow Troll in the Corner, Brent Newell, are developing a game on there. We're developing an independent RPG called The Meat Parade, using folks on G+. Anybody can pop in and do what they like. It's Creatively Common licensed and free to use. That's one of the beauties of social media and G+ right now, is you can do crazy stuff like that.
Back on episode 95 of Wargaming Recon, I had a really special guest, another special guest like yourself, who is the editor, managing editor-in-chief of this series of Wargaming magazines. And we talked about getting guests on for whatever you're doing, because he used to host a podcast dedicated to one of his magazines. And I mentioned how way back in the day when I started Wargaming Recon, although it wasn't known as that, back in 06, I never expected anyone would want to be on the show.
Right.
And then I had to get that courage to approach people who I thought would be someone who I'd want to chat with on the show.
Yep.
And so, like, I had to put myself out there. And it's hard, because no matter how thick your skin is, you still fear that rejection. And you wonder, like, are they going to feel it's worth their time? And then it's progressed so that people ask me to be on the show. And I still, I'm like, oh, my God, are they going to feel it was worthwhile? Or did I just waste their time doing stuff?
Yeah.
So I always look at the numbers and try to figure out, like, if it's someone selling something, did they get any sales from it? If they are blogging, do they get extra hits? And I always try to follow up, and maybe I worry too much about that. I don't know, but I'm always like, was it worth it for them? And most importantly, if it's someone who I felt a really good connection with and someone who I feel is going to be interesting for the audience to hear again and again, I love to invite them back. But if they're like, what a waste of time, I don't want to talk with that kid anymore, it gets tricky. Do you ever encounter that with Indie Talks?
Not really. Maybe I just don't think that way anymore. I used to think that way, but, you know, Troll in the Corner is my second website that's dedicated to geeky stuff, and it's been running since 2008. My first one, Ars Geek, was up in 2005, so I kind of gotten over that hurdle of feeling awkward. Although one of the weirdest experiences I've ever had before the guest even came onto the show was this guy, Victor Vernardo, who's an actor. And he's a LARPer. He's somebody who likes to make independent films, and he's doing an independent YouTube series about a LARP. He's also in that movie Pluto Nash with Eddie Murphy, and he's been in movies with Arnold Schwarzenegger. His booking agent called me and asked if he could go on the show. That was a little surreal. That's never happened to me before, no matter what I've done. But, I mean, I've had some cool folks on my show, Monty Cook, Jen Page, John Wick, Jason Morningstar, all because, you know, Tracy Barnett, who's a Troll in the Corner alumnus, who's now working on an actual novel he's kickstarting, and has several games that he successfully kickstarted as well, all because I've asked them. So you got to kind of just pull yourself over that hurdle if you want to do this, if you're planning on having a site with interviews or having a podcast where you're going to have guests on, and say, you know what, it doesn't matter. The worst thing that will possibly happen to you is somebody will say no. You know, really, that's the worst thing that will happen to you. Nobody goes online and derides you unless they're idiots, in which case, you don't want them on your show anyways.
Absolutely. People may be curious how this actually relates to, and it does, trust me, how it relates to the topic at hand, because maybe not everyone's familiar with the phrase pay what you want, and we're going to get into this more in depth in a minute, but my whole thought process when I asked you, Ben, to come on was that you've adopted this pay what you want, and with all of your publishing, and that a lot of historical wargamers will see a rule set and say, oh, I like this part, I hate this page, what the heck were they thinking? And then they'll modify it, adapt it, and then try to share it with other gamers.
Right.
And that maybe doing things like just photocopying it and handing it out, not the most effective way. Maybe self-publishing it could be a better way, and using the power of the internet. And instead of maybe just trying to get it out there for free, which isn't bad, don't get me wrong, but maybe people would price it in a way that would shoot themselves in the foot, so that this whole pay what you want and your experience with it, which I think is really interesting, could help. And at the same time, if you're going to do any of this kind of stuff, you need to have the courage. You need to be unafraid to ask for help, to approach people, mm-hmm. to put yourself out there. You have to be a shameless self-promoter.
Yeah.
And whether that's podcasting or trying to get your addendums for rules or supplements or scenarios or any of that kind of stuff, you need to do it. You need to embrace it and say, okay, I'm going to put this hat on and get rid of the other one where I'm just going to be a shy kid in the corner.
Yeah. And let's begin at the beginning with the self-promotion thing, which is where everything starts. Nobody's going to talk about your stuff unless you just put up the next big thing. The problem is that unless you get it out there, nobody's going to know the next big thing just came out. You know, when Dominion came out, Donald Vaccarino, had a company behind him that was doing advertising and a distributor that got it to gaming stores and online places like Amazon all over the world. We don't have that luxury. At least I don't have that luxury. And I'm assuming most people in my boat, who, you know, I'm a very small fish in a fairly large pond of independent publishing, don't have that luxury as well. So first of all, you have to sort of master the art of self-promotion without going over that line into spam. Nobody wants you to wander on to their online front porch and start blathering about your next big thing or your next small thing or whatever it's going to be. You have to build up an audience online of people who are sort of interested in you, what you have to say, and interested in what you're doing before you can really even start with a self-promotion. So it's kind of a fine line you got to walk there. You can't just step into, I don't know, the board game community on G+ and say, I have this awesome new Kickstarter that's going up tomorrow, and I know nobody's ever heard of me, but I'm trying to raise $75,000. That's just not going to fly. You're not going to make it. You know. But if you start contributing to communities and forums, Facebook, whatever, start talking to people and become known to folks, and then start putting in references to your own work, saying, well, hey, this is something that I'm going to do, and I'm thinking about doing this, that's when you start getting both valuable feedback, and you're going to have people interested in what you're doing. So it's a feedback loop. You know, the more you contribute to the community above and beyond whatever it is that you're trying to put out, the better it's going to be for you. And that could be something as simple as engaging in a conversation with a publisher or a fellow indie person talking about fishing, whatever, you know, whatever, or, you know, going to these small-ish, in quotes, conventions and networking with folks, networking with local folks. You never know who's going to be the next person to back you or who's going to be the next person to say, oh, you know, I went to art school and I've been doing fantasy art for 27 years and I'm cheap. You need an artist? You just never know. So make sure that you are decent at self-promoting without being spammy and slimy.
When someone wants to self-promote and wants to network, it can be kind of tricky because, like you said at first, you're not going to necessarily see any dividends, and that's actually a good thing because if people start responding right away, that in my mind means maybe you went over that line that you shouldn't have, that you should give a lot more than you're getting.
Yeah, there are two possibilities if that happens. The first is that you are a master marketer, and if you're not working in marketing, you have missed your calling. And the second is that maybe you're pushing a little too hard. Because, you know, if you push really hard, you're going to get some people who are going to follow you, but you're going to also start turning off a lot of people as well. And I almost guarantee you'll turn off more people and more influential people than you will gain followers, you know, in the long run. So you got to, and it took me a while to get there as well. There's a point where I was on Reddit every day, like, hey, check out my stuff. And I finally realized this is years ago, but this is stupid. This isn't getting me anywhere. So moderate yourself to the point where you're saying what you want to say about your stuff, I don't know, every fifth or tenth time. But the other times, you're contributing to somebody else's stuff. You know, everybody likes to talk about their own ideas and their own concepts. And if you are talking about their stuff, they're going to look at you. And you have to be honest about this, too. Don't sit there and be like, I'm going to go and talk about seven people's things and then get them as my followers. That doesn't work either. You know, you got to do it from the heart. It's got to be something that you love to talk about. But if you're talking about their stuff, they're going to look on you a lot more favorably than if they've never seen you before, or if the only time they've ever seen you is when you're blathering on about your own stuff.
Well, because if you're doing that, you're actually standing out, whereas everyone else is me, 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 me.
Exactly.
Someone else saying nothing, or saying you, that's unheard of.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, it's, I don't want to say it's a small field, indie publishing. Anybody can be an indie publisher right now. I could write something in a Word document, turn it into a PDF and throw it up on DriveThruRPG in the next 30 minutes, never having published anything before, and boom, I'm an indie publisher. You know, so it depends on how you define the term indie publisher and what that really means. So when to think of this as like a small sort of gathering where everybody knows everybody else, that's not true. What is true is there are some pretty big figures in this that everybody knows. And then there are lots of other folks who are somewhat influential, not so much in getting you a deal or getting you money or anything like that, but just in getting on board or getting behind your idea or giving you that one piece of feedback that you were really looking for that nobody else has given you. So, you know, play the field and take the advantage of being cool. And I guess it all goes back to Wheaton's Law. Don't be a dick. You know, get on there and contribute as much as other, as you expect other people to contribute to you, and things will work out, I think.
Well, there's a certain level of quality, too, because like you said, anyone anywhere could just be like, let me just type up something, turn it into a PDF, and throw it online somewhere, and be like, I'm a publisher.
Yep.
No, you're not. You're a person who typed up something and threw it online. Like, you threw it online. In my mind, in order to be considered a publisher, you have to have put as much care into it in order to make it worthwhile for someone who doesn't know you, who has no idea who you are, to want to spend the time to obtain it and immerse themselves in it. I'm not even talking about spending money on it, but like to actually be like, I'm going to spend some of my most valuable limited time to grab whatever this is and just look at it, read it, see what it is.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm in a much different boat than some other folks in the indie publishing sphere. I don't use this to pay my mortgage. You know, I don't use this to buy healthcare for my family. I have a day job like so many other folks. And when it really comes down to it between the site and the podcast and being a guest on other people's podcasts and writing and developing and trying to find artists and running the charity things that I run and all that other stuff, I really have maybe 5 to 10 hours a week that I can dedicate to this thing. There are other folks out there, like Jay Libby's a good example, who also has, a day job, but he's probably putting 20 or 30 hours of his time and his heart into his publications as well with the G-Course stuff that he does. So there are people out there who can put the time and the effort into it or who rely on this stuff to pay their salaries. That's not me. So my take on this whole pay what you want and what it is to be a publisher might be a little bit different than their take on it. Because to them, it's bringing in a significant amount of income and it's something that they're running not only because they love the hobby, but because they want to earn a living in the hobby as well or supplement their income seriously. I don't make enough money off of my stuff to even really consider it supplementing my income. What I make out of this stuff either gets rolled right back into buying more art and editing and layout, or it goes to purchasing the occasional game so that I can review it on the site, you know? So it depends on your outlook on this and where you're coming from as well. That will vastly change how you're going to look at pay what you want. But as a starting publisher, as you said, somebody who wants to riff off of an existing war game rule set or create their own, I think it could be a really interesting way to do it because when you're putting out your first several products, you don't really know what to charge unless you have a development team with a bunch of artists and you just kickstarted it for X amount of dollars and, you know, that's what you need to accomplish. So putting something simple and easy and well-produced but not flashy out, people either tend to way overvalue their products. Well, you know, this is the best rule set that I've ever seen, so it's going to be $35 for the 17-page PDF. Or way undervalue their products. If you're not going to put it up there for free, you know, they'll put it up there for a buck, and they'll sell maybe 7 copies because people are like, I don't know, if it was free, I'd grab it. I don't know if I really want to spend a buck on something. So pay what you want may give them the option of letting folks get it for free if they want, and if they like it, either passing the word around and having other people buy it or having other people watching that space for the next thing that comes out and being willing to pay for it.
A few listeners and I actually have this secret project kind of in the back of our minds, which everyone's going to think, this is the real reason why Jonathan had Ben on the show. And it's not because I know Ben in real life and I could just be like, Ben, let's talk.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But I think I'm going to tell the story and let the cat out of the bag maybe a little early to give it as a good example that a few listeners and I have been looking at some of the existing rule sets that we've been playing, in particular Black Powder, and I know this name might mean nothing to you, Ben, which is okay because historical is not your thing.
Right.
But Black Powder, for listeners, you guys know, it's hugely popular Warlord Games and all the big names from like Games Workshop and stuff who are really into historicals who no longer work at Games Workshop are involved with this in creating all these wonderful rule sets. And we've been playing these and thinking, this is a lot of fun. We really like it. But the book doesn't have a whole lot of scenarios. The idea is that gamers will do their own research into history based off of whatever conflict or era they like and find out, well, the Battle of whatever, this is how it was, and then adapt that as a scenario for their needs. But sure. Maybe not every gamer has the time to do that, or the desire, or the will, or the inclination, or, you know, the whatever. So why not have us do that instead, so that we could create some items that we would put out for people to obtain that have some ready-made scenarios that could be used for just about any role system. So non-specific, where they're not going to be just for, say, Black Powder, or Hill Caesar, Saga, or whatever, but for a particular type of game. So there would be ones maybe either for a skirmish type of game or for a more formal, larger formation game. But one that people can pick up the item, the brochure, the pamphlet, whatever it's going to be, and flip through it and read it and see all the information and see where it says, well, we suggest you have Force A have this and Force B that, and your table should look like whatever because this is how it was at the Battle of etc. And do all the grunt work, basically, and get the artwork and put it together as a publication. And this is something that wargamers like to do. They like to take something and compile it. A very famous and deceased British wargamer, Donald Featherstone, did this a lot. He published real books, mainstream books, that went out and sold very well. And there's one I actually bought a recent re-release of via, I think it was Amazon, actually. And it's called The Wargamer's Guide to the American War of Independence, American Rev. And he took a bunch of the main battles, and he had other stuff, some rule suggestions or whatever in the front, but he took all the main battles and put little maps and suggestions on, well, Force A is this and Force B that and so forth. So it would be in that kind of tradition. Yeah. And it's something that any wargamer could do. So if we wanted to do this, we could do, like you said, just type something up and throw it online. But we want to have some sort of greater quality and control over it so that there's more value for people's time. And you have, for example, a really good, solid publishing experience because you put out quite a few games. So I feel you are the best expert on the topics of publishing and pay what you want for what a typical historical wargamer would probably do for this. And let's talk about some of your games because I know that I don't know what all of them are, but I know quite a few of them.
Let me interject here with 2 points before we get onto the stuff that I've done on what you've said. And we'll call, for sake of argument, we'll call what I do casual indie publishing. And that, while I'm relatively prolific over the long run, I'm nowhere near as prolific as lots of other folks out there. So you're talking about your secret project, and here's the silly little secret of, there's two silly little secrets, really, of gaming that shouldn't be secrets, and everybody kind of knows them, but doesn't matter if you're a war gamer, doesn't matter if you're into RPGs or if you're a board gamer. If you've ever modified a game, if you're a GM and you spent time making a new race or a new character class, or you've changed an adventure that's been published or written your own adventure, if you're a board gamer who's come up with some kick-ass house rules that make the game that much more fun, well, guess what? You're an indie publisher in the making right there. You've just done exactly what you've said. It happens all across the tabletop hobby, and people need to realize that they're already doing what they think is so hard to do, which is getting off their butts writing something and publishing it. They're just not publishing it. They've already gotten off their butts. They've been probably doing it their whole lives. You know, GMs for RPGs, they've been coming up with these brilliant ideas for, what, since they were 15 or 16, and now they're 30, and they're saying, I can't publish something. Of course you can. It just takes a little bit of perseverance. So that's the silly myth number one. The silly myth number two is the myth of the secret project. you and I may have differing views on this. I can't stand secret projects. I've become a huge, huge devotee to, if not developing in public, at least not clamping down on development, because nobody's going to steal your idea if that's why you're worried about it. Nobody knows that the next best thing out there is going to be your thing if it is going to be the next best thing. If they knew that, they would have already developed it. If people are turning an eye to it and saying, ugh, I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole, you're probably onto something, because it's probably so different that they wouldn't even consider doing it. So that, there's that to consider. But the second thing is that nobody's going to steal your ideas. I've talked to so many board game designers, quote-unquote, again, the air quotes, who have been designing board games for so long, but they're afraid to talk about them or share their ideas or playtest them in public because they don't want somebody wandering away and stealing their idea. Well, guess what? It isn't going to happen. the chances of that happening are so slim because there are so many people out there developing these things, and publishers are so overwhelmed with people clamoring for attention that it just isn't going to happen. You need to clamor for attention and get your ideas out there if you want anybody to notice. So those are the two myths that I want to sort of, at least in my mind, that I sort of want to bring up from my point of view. Now let's talk about me.
Well, let's talk about you.
Yeah, sure.
In my mind, tons, but you're probably going to say not tons. You have quite a few games that you've published or that you're working on. You have a few projects that, I'm not going to use the term secret, but I know at least one that you are not allowed to talk about.
Yes.
And you have others that are just things in the works.
Yep.
You're always creating something new, which is very fascinating for me. So let's talk about, like, how many are there and what types and what do you do? And
how many are there? I don't know. I've got a bunch of stuff out there. I've got 5 games in development right now, one of which is pretty much done with development. It's the one that shall not be named, which I am hoping to get published before the end of the year. But we'll see what happens with that. I have several other board games that are card games that I'm working on myself. One is a kids game called Co-Pirate, which is a really bad name, but it's a working title where you take on the role of a co-pirate and you take over a pirate ship for the day and you go on this race and the winner of the race gets to become an official pirate. And, you know, it's a kids card lane race sort of game that I'm working on because I have kids and I like to game with them. I've got a couple of reskinned and rethemed. Several months ago, I got really into medieval and Renaissance games, and I've been looking at a lot of games that have sort of fallen out of favor, and tweaking them and reskinning them so that they are modern and new and interesting. And out of the 15 or 20 rule sets that I was really interested in, 2 of them have sort of worked out to be something that I think could be good and runnable. So I'm designing those as well. I've got another game that I don't really want to talk about yet, not because of the whole secret thing, but just because I haven't done enough work on it to really discuss it with any intelligence. But I'm sure people who follow me on G+ or Facebook will be hearing me blather about it towards the end of this year. And I have Upgrade Wars too, which is the best deck building tactical combat game that hasn't found a publisher yet. So I have been officially rejected by 3 publishers. I have gotten stony silence from 1, and I've gotten mild interest from another, but with a let's see what happens later on in the world of gaming. So I'll continue to push that as well. So that's kind of what's happening. I have a whole bunch of role-playing stuff out, and I believe I have the only card game that Board Game Geek refused to classify as a card game. So I might have claimed that with my Ninja game. Because it's technically not a tabletop game, as you don't really play it on a table so much as you play it in the real world. And they told me to go to the RPG Geek and see if they would accept it, and they told me to go to Board Game Geek and see if they would accept it, and so nobody's accepted it. But you know, that's Ninja for you, I guess. They're so mysterious and silent they can't even get on a BGG.
Well, you know what that means, don't you? It means you lose.
That's right, that does mean I lose, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's the first game that I self-published that was a card game that I've actually done print on demand. And as such, as being the first and only one that I've done, it's also my bestseller. But you can grab it on DriveThruRPG. It's free. It's pay what you want. Feel free to drop me a couple of bucks if you want it. But you know the premise of the game. Essentially, you have these ninja cards that tell you you lose, and you have to give them to somebody else without them realizing what the hell they're getting. And the first time you do it, it's easy. And then they have to get it back to you or somebody else playing the game. And then it gets progressively harder because people come to expect it. And then you realize the joy of waiting a month and then surprising somebody with it because they've forgotten about it type thing. And yeah, it's a game that can be played over a night or at a convention or over the course of your entire life.
Well, as the Klingons say, revenge is a dish best served cold.
That's true. And I believe that originated a little bit earlier than the Klingons. But we'll go with Klingons for this.
I mean, how can you say no to a Klingon? It's like playing chess with a Wookiee and then not letting the Wookiee win.
There you go, yep. A Wookiee doesn't rip your arm. I mean, a droid doesn't rip your arm off.
That's true.
Yeah. So that's what I'm sort of developing and the newest stuff that's out there. And there's the Meat Parade that I'm working on with Brent and a few other folks on G+, which I hope to have out and available for people to download as a single product rather than a bundle of Google Docs by the end of the year. But we'll see what happens with that. And then most lately I've had Encounters, Plots, and Places, which is a system neutral grouping of settings, encounters, objects, and plot lines you can just grab and shove into your fantasy game. I have Something Went Wrong, which is, as far as I know, one of the few competitive RPGs out there. It's the only time you can really win at an RPG, when you win by being the last one being alive. I like it. It's a lot of fun where you basically, everybody gets a turn to be a GM. Every single round of an encounter, a new person becomes the GM. And as you gain experience, you can spend that experience points to make things go wrong for the other players. And then we have whole bunches of tables that you can roll on of awful things that happen to you. And then I have the Sock Puppet game, Argyle and Crew, which is a very free-form, very rules-light role-playing game that's especially good for young kids. If you have a four-year-old and you're dying to game with them, this is the thing to do, because instead of a character sheet, your character is a sock puppet that you have to build. And as they gain experience going through the world, they get to add more special powers to them. But it's really imagination-driven more so than rules-driven, although I put in a two-page section of rules for people who are sticklers about that kind of thing. And it's also been fairly helpful, I think, for teachers and for counselors, psychologists, and social workers who are working with kids who need to work through some issues, because it's a lot easier to do that through play therapy with a sock puppet than it is to just sit down and talk about it. So those are my big things right now.
I'm sure listeners can tell that based off the type of games that you're publishing, not only are they the type of games that you like to play, but that you have a lot of experience playing them. For example, I know you love to play role-playing games. Mm-hmm. You're a huge role-playing game person, and you love board games and ones that are role-playing games that are board games, like Talisman, kind of, yeah. To me, is the crossover for all that. But then also, you have this really strong background in education that I think helps you with all of the products that you make. So it makes it really fun and interesting to see what you come out with, because everyone kind of has this whole different foundation for what they do. And I find a lot of wargamers have certain similarities in their foundations of what it is. For example, in school, I was a politics and history major, and that's kind of like a prevalent sort of thing, or sort of mechanical and technology and that sort of stuff. So to see someone with this other type of background, it's refreshing to see what kind of stuff comes out of that.
Thanks. Yeah, I have a master's in education, and my undergraduate degree is in medieval studies and anthropology. And I find myself gravitating to make the games that nobody else has made because I want to play them. And that can be a little bit unfortunate, though, because I get a lot of those, "What the hell are you doing?" kind of moments from publishers and people out there. You know, Ninja, take for example, is not a game that any publisher, I think, in their right mind, and rightfully so, would want to publish and try and distribute someplace like Barnes & Noble's or your friendly local game shop, because who's going to pay $12 for 20 cards? But then you have games like Love Letters where people pay, you know, $15 or $12 for 16 cards. But if you look at it, it's more of a prank delivery system than it is really a game, and you're paying more for the opportunity to frustrate the hell out of your friends than you are to sit down for a night of gaming. So, you know, that's one that I decided to throw out there on my own, because surprisingly, people will actually pay $12 or $13 plus shipping for 20 cards in a neat little box with a whole scenario that they can do that for. So I find the games that I'm developing are different than things that are out there, because the games that I want to play, nobody's made yet. And that's not entirely true. I mean, I'm head over heels for games like Dominion or Ascension or X-Wing, you know, the first miniatures game that I've really gotten into. I love me some X-Wing. I love to play the hell out of games like that, and I'll play those all night long, every single night, until I get that weird itch to play something that nobody else has done before. You know, so Upgrade Wars, it's a deck builder where you don't actually build your deck. You use it as an engine to churn out cards to get them into a tactical combat situation and then blow the hell out of them. You know, so you're never actually, you start out with a deck of 10 cards, and you're lucky if you get up to 20 by the end of the game. You know, so that's I find my tendency, and I guess I'll keep plugging away on it until somebody finally sees how brilliant I really am, and I'm being sarcastic here, and maybe publishes one, and hey, if it takes off, then that will give me a platform to publish some other neat and interesting things as well.
look at Win, Lose, or Banana, the people who did We Didn't Play Test This at All.
Yeah.
We Didn't Play, like all of those, they kickstarted that. It's $1 for 3 cards. One says you win, one says you lose, one says banana. And it is the most absurd, and I love it, game, although not everyone else I play with seems to like
sure,
it. Because
sure.
Some definitions of it by others who I've played it with are things I can't say on here because we're relatively family-friendly on here. But it's a really simple but out-of-the-box kind of game. And it's literally, for those of you who don't know, it is literally a 3-card game where you have the cards, you play with 2 other people, one person gets one card, one gets another one, and someone has a card that says you win. Mm-hmm. You win, but wait, maybe not, because the other two have to convince the winner that they have the banana card. And
right.
If the loser convinces successfully, then they win. And if the banana and the one who convinces it, then the winner and the banana person wins. And what do they win? Well, a banana. Not really, unless you have like a lot of, I don't know, stock in Chiquita or something.
Sure.
But it's a stupid, silly kind of little game, and people, they buy it. It's $1 for 3 cards, and it comes in a little cellophane bag. But people buy it all over the place. It's ridiculous. It was kickstarted for all sorts of money successfully, so... And it's put out there, and people will do it.
Let me ask you this. How many hours of enjoyment, not just playing, but thinking about, have you gotten out of spending a buck on that silly game? You know what I mean? If it's been 3 hours, well, compare that to a 2-hour movie and how much you'd spend to go see that with 2 other people. Jesus, the fun ratio is off the charts when it comes to something like that. That's kind of the same thing with this ninja game that I have. You know, you spend $15 on it to ship it out to you, and you think it's crazy, it's 20 cards. I've been playing this game since before last February, and I'm still playing it with the same people. I'm still playing it with my family. I fully expect to show up at Total Confusion in February of next year and still be playing it with some of the folks that I was playing it with last year or this current year. So to me, having to spend the money to ship out a couple of copies to myself, totally worth it. We're talking months and months of enjoyment and anticipation and wondering when something silly like that is going to come in the mail. I had a friend of mine send me one from England that they printed out themselves to my work address, which they had to track down. You can't buy that kind of game on the shelves right now, unless you go out and buy Win, Lose, Banana, you know what I mean, or the Ninja game. And I like games like that. I'm attracted to things like that. And that, let's bring us back to the conversation again. That's where that pay what you want model might come in handy, because I had somebody pay $5 for a print and play copy of Ninja Silent But Deadly. They could have gotten it for free, but they elected to give me $5. And I think that's their way of saying, I like this. Do more like this. You know what I mean? So for people who are publishing those little one-off things, or for folks like yourself and your listeners who are putting together a rule set that they don't know how much it's to sell for or how successful it will be, it might be a wonderful model to put it out there under, because you know, budget what you need to budget to make it come to life the way you want to, and expect to not get that money back. And then every single penny that you make off of it from there on in is a bonus. You've just published something. You've done it as a, I don't want to say a vanity project. You've done it as a love. You've done it because you love playing the games and you want to get your ideas out there so other people can take advantage of them and maybe riff on them themselves. And then if you start making money off that on top of it, brilliant. Even if you don't, the next thing you put out, the next thing anybody from that group of people who are putting this out may, you know, you got to build that foundation, and pay what you want is a great way to do that. And then 3 years down the line, if you publish 2 or 3 other rule sets, somebody may wander by and pay you for all of them. You never know.
Let's talk about pay what you want. Yeah. It should seem apparent that pay what you want means a certain thing, because it's a phrase and it's very distinct, and mm-hmm. I would say most people understand it. But define pay what you want as
sure. Crazy as pay what you want, at least as DriveThruRPG is doing it right now, it's an initiative that was, I believe, started off by Fred Hicks from Evil Hat Games, and he basically said, we want to go to this model for some of our games. Can you implement it? And Evil Hat is a pretty damn big indie company. If you can call them an indie company anymore, it really depends on how you're defining it. But I think they're very influential in the independent publishing realm. So influential that DriveThruRPG, One Bookshelf Corporation, said, okay, we're going to do this. And they did. So you essentially go and you find a game that you want. And if it happens to be pay what you want, it may say something like, Argyle and Crew, Adventures in the Land of Scoffs, pay what you want, and it's $2.99. You go to add that to your cart, though, and it says, pay what you want. Starts off with $0.00, and that is perfectly fine if you want to pay nothing for it, because that's how we set the model up. If you want to pay the full cover price, $3.99, go nuts. If you want to pay $1, go for it. You want to spend $1,000 on my PDF, you're a little crazy, but whatever, go for it. I won't complain. And the same goes for any other publisher who's doing this as well. So essentially, you pay what you want. You pay what you think you'll get out of this product. And, you know, again, like I said, I'm in a little bit different space here, so it's going to mean different things to me. But for me, it's very much a marketing tool. It's very much this guy isn't charging for his stuff, you know, but it's good. Maybe we should give him some money. I found that I've made more money setting everything to pay what you want than I have ever having people pay full cover price for it. And not only that, but I've gotten more product out into people's hands. So it's been a win-win for me. And I think a lot of people will find it this way as well. Although the initial first month hype is sort of wearing off and sales are slowing down a bit. But the purpose of me putting these things out there is so people can play with them. And I would much rather have somebody pay nothing to get something that they enjoy playing with than pay a buck and get something they can't stand or will never read. Do you see the sort of opposition there, Jonathan? You know, if you spend a buck on something of mine and you can't stand it, you're never going to buy anything I ever put out ever again. Probably not. If you spend nothing on something that I put out and you enjoy it, even mildly, you might be tempted to spend a little bit more money on something else I put on to help support me or because you feel I deserve it. If you spend $1 on something that I put out and just never have a chance to open it, again, you're never going to look at it. If you download something that I have for free and you don't like it, you don't feel any sort of angst towards me because you haven't paid anything for it. Unless you're just that kind of person that likes to get online and shout at me because they can't stand what I've done, which there are folks out there like that. But I think it's a great way to get your product into people's hands in a no-risk, try-before-you-buy situation. And if it turns out that they love it, they may buy it again, or they may point out to some friends and say, drop this guy a couple of bucks, or drop these folks a couple of bucks because what they're doing is amazing. Does that work for bigger publishers? Probably not. The model that I see them going to, and Fred has talked about this, I believe, before too, is that they'll release a flagship product, a core rule set, that would normally sell as a PDF for $15 or $20. They'll release that for pay what you want. So there's a chance that they'll make that $15 or $20 on it. There's a chance that they'll make nothing on it. But it'll be popular because it's coming out from a big company that has a big name, has a marketing budget, and lots of people know and love. Then they will release supplements for that product that are not pay what they want. They're pay me $3 or pay me a buck or pay me $5.99 for this. And that's where they're going to make the majority of their profits is by letting people get the first taste for free, and then they have to come back and pay if they want more. The beauty of that model is they don't have to come back and get more. They have the core rules. They can play and make up whatever they want with that. The beauty of that model from the publisher and business person side of things is that people love their products. They're big enough to get a draw. People will come back and buy them. So they're basically just setting themselves up to have more sales in a good way, in the most community-friendly way that I can think of.
I've seen Pay What You Want kind of take on two other different approaches besides mm-hmm. the whole one book chill drive through RPG War Game Vault sort of thing. One where people are able to set it up so that there's a minimum buy-in for every product. That
yes.
It's at least $1. It's at least $5 or whatever for this like $20 thing or $13, yeah. $15, whatever. But you can pay however much you want. You have to pay at least the 99 cents or whatever. Mm-hmm. But if you feel it's really worth $5, you spend $5 or whatever it is. And then the other kind of mode, which people might not really consider pay what you want because there's not actually a way to directly pay for what you're getting, is what Sam Mustafa does. He's a game designer for all sorts of great historical games. He has a new one coming out in 2013 called Longstreet. It's a mm-hmm. American Civil War miniatures game. And what he does is it's really cool. He creates these rules, and they all kind of have this central theme in them for a gameplay mechanic, no matter what sort of error he's doing.
Sure.
And then he expands that to add the flavor and all that other stuff for the conflicts and the error. But a main component is he uses cards in these games where they add, say, maybe a certain national trait or ability for something. And it's not random where, like, oh, you're playing Pokemon or something, and you're like, I got such and such, and this trumps right, your whatever. Right. But you have the option of saying, oh, wait a sec, I have Union Cavalry, and Union Cavalry was really cool in the scenario. So if they're able to, say, go through woods or something, you know, they're able to do something that makes sense historically that expands on what's happening. And so what he does is he puts out his games, and he says, okay, you can do a few things. You can buy the whole kit and caboodle as a physical product. You pay whatever price. You can pay for just the PDF of the rules, no problem. You can pay for just a PDF of all the cards, no problem. You can buy the physical cards. But what he also does, and this is how I kind of tie it in my head with the whole pay what you want thing, he creates a very, very, very light version of the rules. Not even like beginner kind of setup, but enough that you could actually get going, you can play a complete game, have fun, and you could spend your life just playing the light version of his rules. Completely free as a PDF, you download, you print, whatever. And if you like it, if you feel you want that extra functionality of all the other stuff, then you can buy it for whatever you want. If you only have X amount of money, just a little bit, and you want to do the PDFs, fine, do the PDFs, print it out yourself, whatever. You can go hog wild and get the full product. It's no problem. But with the light version, it gives you enough cards, it gives you the enough rules, so you can play a whole game. So he's doing it a little differently where you're not able to get that light version and say, well, I'm going to give him $5 for it.
Right.
You, there's no way to pay anything for it.
Yeah.
But
it's,
the
it is implication a
is you kind of you make that jump and you buy the other product. Like, so it's a little different, right, but in my head, kind of related.
Again, it kind of comes back to marketing. You're building an audience. You might have some person who's in college who's utterly broke that gets the free thing and loves it. And then 5 years down the road, they've graduated, gotten a job, and they go out and buy all your rule set. You never know, you know what I mean? I tried that model with a lot of success, but something went wrong, where I had a very rough formatted version of the game with the complete text in there and all the rules that was free. And then if you spent $3, you get the extra version, which came with a few extra tables, some artwork was formatted, had a clickable table of contents and all that fun stuff. And that worked out pretty well. I had a whole ton of people download the free one, and some of them came back and bought the $3 one. But it's not, like you said, quite a pay-what-you-want model. And yes, there are DriveThruRPG One Bookshelf doesn't support the pay-what-you-want as long as it's at least a buck model yet. They released this in a very raw form, and they're working on it over time, and they're going to make it easier for publishers and I think easier for consumers to get into it as well. Right now, you can't search their site for titles that are pay-what-you-want. Which is, I think, a major feature they need to add on there. But they're working on stuff like that. You know, this is new for them. So my guess is they probably will implement a pay-what-you-want model with a minimum purchase price. You know, say you want to put out a bundle there, like the Humble Indie Bundle that lots of indie video game developers do, where you want people to at least pay $5 for it because it's for charity, but they can, you know, it's $75 for the games. I can see that coming in this space as well. So, but I really see pay what you want as a double sort of thing. On the one hand, it is marketing. It is a way to entice people to get stuff who maybe wouldn't have gotten it before. And it is working because a lot more people have downloaded my stuff than ever did before. But in a way, it's also sort of giving back to the community too. In from my space, I don't care if you don't pay anything. As long as you download something, especially if you get something out of use, or something of use from it, from my products, then more power to you. But I've always sort of kind of given my games away if people ask for them as well. And if you're running a business as a business, you can't do that. You cannot do that because, you know, people like Evil Hat Games. I'm not going to say they're in this to make money, but they're making amazing products so they can support themselves and make more amazing products. So at some point, they have to make money off their products and guarantee that they will do so because they have costs, you know what I mean? And they have to pay their artists and they have to pay for a bunch of other stuff as well. You're also probably not going to see this with physical products either. There's always going to be a minimum that you're going to have to pay just to get things shipped out the door. And if people are paying $0 for a $49 book, then your company's going to lose money so fast that you will find yourself back in your mom's basement before you know what happens.
In my head, it almost seems contrary that you're having the success you are, that you're not only putting out more product, but that you're actually making more money, because if people can pay what they want, why pay anything? Why not just get it for free?
Right.
We always hear about the piracy of everything and that people like the product, but it's not in a way that they want it. And it's not a terrible way. So they get it illegally, whatever it is, movies, music, anything. Why pay? Because who cares, right? And we can forget about the fact that people need to support themselves and need to introduce the money into their products so they can make more products that we know and like and love and that we can then go get illegally. So why would people
actually give you money? It's a moot issue. 99% of the people who are going to pirate your stuff wouldn't have paid you for it anyways. I almost see it as a good thing. If you're so popular that people are pirating your stuff, good on you. You've done something good. Either that or you've made some sort of DRM in your product so hard to manage for people who have paid it that people just get frustrated and go and pirate your game. That's video games. But, pirating PDFs obviously does happen as well. It's a moot thing. If 1% of the folks who pirate my games would have actually paid for them at some point, what do I care? Have the game. Take it. Most of my stuff that isn't done under somebody else's license is Creative Commons as well, and you're free to download it, distribute it, and do whatever you want with it anyways. So why pay me money? Because there's a whole subset of folks out there who understand that if they like something and they want to get more of it, they're going to have to pay for it or no more is going to come. And I believe that's really a growing subset of folks as well. And there's also a trend. Somebody posts somewhere, I know you can get this thing for free, but I dropped the guy $5 and look, he sent me this personalized thing. You know, I'm not saying you have to do that, but I appreciate every time somebody spends $1 on my stuff. Really, really appreciate it. And I try and show that appreciation by putting out more stuff later down the line that's better than the stuff that I put out before. So if you like what I'm doing now, man, you're going to love what I'm going to put out later. You know, that's sort of my philosophy. But do you want to take a look at some numbers or take a listen to some numbers and see what it's
absolutely.
Like?
Yeah, okay. absolutely. I think this is fascinating. Not only that you've been having the success, but I think numbers are going to really bring it home for people because Wargamers are a really close-knit group of people. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a rarity for anyone who's really involved in the wargaming community to not know someone somewhere else in the world who is also doing it. I think that's also true of the indie community. Like you said, you may not know everyone, but you know certain names. It's like that 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, where somewhere or other, we're all kind of connected through this thing we call our hobby, whatever it is, to someone else who maybe we didn't realize that we were connected to.
Absolutely.
People, like you said, they care, they understand, and they want to be supportive. They want more stuff to come out, and if people are just taking your stuff, it's not going to happen. Some places, like, I don't know if you've heard the story, the people who make Minecraft, Mojang, they have the story of their company. It was a documentary and everything, and so the people who did the documentary, they put it out, and they were selling it, and they said, you know, we love what this company's doing. We love Minecraft, and I'm a huge Minecraft addict. I've talked about it on Geeks Explicitly, and they're like, this is awesome. You should get it. You should buy it. It costs this amount, but we know that some of you won't. So instead of having it where it's illegal for you to go do your illegal copywriting sort of stuff, we're going to say, we wish you would buy it. We wish you'd spend the money because it costs a lot of money for us to do this. We tried to put our best foot forward, but really, we just want you to watch it. Mm-hmm. So if that means you're going to go get it illegally, it's not illegal. We're giving you permission to do it.
Yeah.
So go ahead and do it. And I think that's awesome that I'm someone who firmly believes in open access and just getting your stuff out there. So all of these episodes of Wargaming Recon, they're under a Creative Commons license. Any products that I do or any of that stuff, it has always been, I just want you to have access to it. If you like it, great. You don't, whatever. But I think it should be out there. I think we should have this free exchange of ideas. And to see that people are hanging on to that, and I think pay what you want is a way that you can firmly be in that camp and at the same time still kind of have like that tip jar at like your local coffee shop where you say, oh, do you know what? I got great service here. I want to reward the fact that these people work their butts off and that they're doing something amazing. So here's a few bucks. Here's whatever. And it's not required. It's something you're doing to show your appreciation, to show that you care.
And keep in mind the demographic that we're selling to. I mean, war gamers, role players, board gamers, there's a certain percentage of us who are getting older, who have stable jobs, who are making a good living, who are in highly technical fields, who are very well educated, who, you know, are professionals or at the top of their field and have no problem. What's $5, you know, to somebody that's doing really well in their life? and they not only have no problem paying for a product, but they are encouraged to do so because they like to see the next forthcoming generation. They like to see these things come out. So there are people around there like that as well. So let's look at some numbers, okay? So May 1st through May 31st. And I'm going to be completely above board and absolutely honest with what I sell through Drive4RPG here. PDFs sold, which also includes free downloads, 317, okay? Of those 317, I grossed a grand total of $32.73. Of that, after Drive4RPG took their cut, I took home $18.02, of which I will, at the end of the year, have to pay taxes on as well. June 1st through June 30th. Now, I believe it was the evening of May 31st that I started putting stuff on the Pay What You Want model. I finished up around June 2nd or June 3rd. Everything I have now is Pay What You Want. I sold, including for a cost of zero, 904 PDFs. Compare that to 317. I grossed $149.49, and I took home a net profit of $96.93. That's quite a difference from $18.02.
That's huge.
It is. And again, like I said, I don't make money hand over fist doing this. I am doing it as a business, but I'm not doing it as a business that I care to make a huge amount of profit in because I'm only investing 5 to 10 hours of my time on everything all told. But that was really nice for me to see. I mean, you know, that's super encouraging.
And we should note, though, for people that neither one of us is a lawyer, neither one of us is an accountant. We're not giving tax advice or legal advice.
Oh, no, God, no.
So, like, each person really has to, first of all, decide, does this make sense for you? Because, like, you raise a really valid point. Mm-hmm. If you're selling something and you're getting money from it, that has tax implications, at least in the U.S. and I'm sure anywhere else in the world. So you need to consider that. And is it worth the trouble for you? And if the answer is yes, then charging for your product, charging, pay what you want, it makes sense. And if the answer is no, then that's a decision you have to make with you and relevant people.
Right.
But we're assuming, or at least I am anyway, and I would presume you are as well, we're assuming that if people are doing this, they've already done that homework on it and they've made the decision, this is something I want to learn more about because it's something that's going to be okay for me to do.
Yeah, because you will get a tax form from DriveThruRPG saying, we paid you this much and you should report that on your taxes if you know you don't want to get audited. And let's look at this month right now. We're 16 days into July. The hype has kind of died down. I've stopped talking about it as much as I did through the month of June. I've sold or given away 220 PDFs so far. I've grossed $40.39 and I've made a net profit of $20.23. So it's slowed down a bit, but still, this month so far, I've taken home $20.23. The month of May, before I went to this model, for the entire month, I've taken home $18.02. So I'm still doing better than I did in the month of May.
Well, like you said, most people who would perhaps be considering this, whether they're indie people, historical wargamers, or whatever, they're not the big companies. They're not like Wizards of the Coast or even mid-level companies where this makes a huge difference in how they're going to approach stuff so that all of us who are looking at it in this way, really, it's money we didn't have before. Mm-hmm. And if all it pays is for us to get a cup of coffee, put some gas in our car, or buy a game, or put it back into making other product, it means it's money that didn't come out of our pocket.
Careful of that trap, though, because you also have to look at your time as money a little bit as well, too. If you spent 1,000 hours, all told, between you and, I don't know, 2 or 3 other people, or just you putting this product together, just think how much you could make at a minimum wage job spending that amount of time. You got to do it because it's something that you're really into, and you got to be willing to invest something into that and not make it back to get that first product out there, whether it's time or whether you just spent $600 on artwork and layout and editing, and then you don't want to see a return of $96.32 because that might be a little discouraging. Go into it with the outlook of, sure, I've invested this time and this money into this thing. Let's see if I can make some of it back. And if you're at my level, maybe you'll have a better outlook on things, you know, making back money over time. If you're really going to invest a good amount of money into something like this and hire professionals, you'll probably want to bring it up to the next level and kickstart the thing or find a publisher or become a publisher and plan on having a distribution channel, you know, things like that. This is really what I call the hobbyist indie publishing sort of venue that's going to benefit, I think, the most from it. People like me. who are thrilled to see $100 come in for a month of what they've done, especially in a month where I haven't released anything new.
Well, and that 100, that allows you, like you said, to buy a game or whatever, but it also allows you to do cool gaming-related things, like maybe to fund a chance for you to go to a convention.
Yeah.
So you can do that network and you can do that other stuff and still have fun. Like, I think it's important you highlight the hobby side of it, that you can, in your head, you can approach it with a business-like manner, because you should think of it as official and wanted to do a good job like you would if someone was paying you at a real job. But you should be doing this because you like it, because you have that fire in your gut that says, this is a fun, cool way to spend your time.
Right, exactly. You know, and don't go into this hobby looking to get rich. You probably, I can almost guarantee that you won't, unless you are the next big thing that comes out. And even then, probably not. And if the business side of things scares you, start by releasing a few things for free and see what happens. And then maybe consider taking it into a sole proprietorship or an LLC, or incorporating and becoming a company, or what have you. But yeah, definitely go into it with a little bit of foresight, and by all means, feel free to contact other folks out in the indie realm, myself included. We all love talking about this stuff. And I have no problems, you know, having people bounce ideas off me as, do you think this is a good idea? Or how much money did you spend when you first did this? Like you said, Jonathan, I'm not a lawyer. You're not a lawyer. I'm not going to give out lawyerly advice, but I have been doing this for a couple of years. So I do have a little bit of experience, and I'm more than happy to share that experience with anybody who needs it.
So based on the few months that you've had with this so far, you feel, if I'm correct in saying this, you feel that this is completely worthwhile for someone like you to not only get into, but to do in the long haul.
This is the model that I'm doing from now on, unless something changes. You know what I mean? If I suddenly see my sales drop way off and I switch a few titles back to the regular way and they start making more money, I'll change back. I don't envision that happening. I don't envision a need for me to do this. I enjoy doing it. I like the fact that folks can go out and get my stuff for free if they want it, and not have to worry about spending any money. That to me, it is worth it in my book. And other people aren't like that. And other people who are running businesses can't do that. You know what I mean? But for me, I'm in the position where I can't. So I might as well. I might as well enjoy every aspect of this hobby and not bang my head against the wall because I didn't make my bottom line and now I can't pay my artist next month and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. That's not why I got into this. If I really wanted to do that, I would try like hell to have somebody else publish my stuff and let them worry about all that stuff. And they can just write me a little check and I'll go on my merry way. So
you've had a lot of pearls of wisdom that you've shared, but if you had to boil it down to one overarching, like, great piece of advice for someone who wants to consider doing this, what would that be?
Doing this as in publishing, or doing this as in pay what you want?
The whole pay what you want, self-publishing, shameless self-promoter sort of thing.
The same thing I say every single time somebody asks me this question. Write these things because you love doing it and you want to see it get into somebody else's hands and you want to share your ideas. If it turns into something that makes you a little bit of money, more power to you. But if you're doing this to make money, if you're doing this to wield some sort of strange power over other folks who are playing games or the internet or something like that, you're not going to have a good time. It's not going to work out well for you. Do it because you enjoy the hell out of the hobby. Do it because you love what you're doing. Do it because even if you weren't going to do this, you'd still be writing these things, and you're on the right track.
So at this point in the show, whenever there's a guest on, I always suggest that they have to, nowadays everyone has an online presence. Mm-hmm. We mentioned the Troll in the Corner, but if people want to keep up to date, not only with your whole pay what you want experiences and all the publishing that you do and the games you do and your everything, who you are online, how should they do that?
They should start by sending a check to the easiest way to do that is to either read Troll in the Corner, trollitc.com, because a thought will strike me and within the next week it's on Troll in the Corner and I'm talking about it. Or if you want a little bit of quicker response, find me on Google+, Ben Gerber, and circle me. I may not circle you back, particularly if you've not written anything on Google+. I tend not to do that. Or if you happen to be a really attractive woman trying to sell something on Google+, because that never seems to work out well for anybody. But if you're on Google Plus and you want to talk to me, circle me, comment on a couple of my things, and we'll go from there. I'm always writing on Google Plus the latest idea that hits my brain, probably before I should. Not again because it's a super secret thing, but because I haven't thought it all the way through yet. But I bounce a lot of ideas off of random people there as well, and also a lot of people that I trust on there now, to see if it is a good idea and then to help develop it further. So if people want to see what I'm up to, that's the best place to find me. If people want a more formalized, easier to read and digest version of that, go to Troll in the Corner. If you want both, then do both. If you want to buy my stuff, go to DriveThruRPG, search for Troll in the Corner. I'm the only troll in the corner on the site. You can get it all for free, so there's no risk, no harm, no foul in doing that.
It must be tough being so lonely in that corner.
I know it is, you know, but that's why I'm throwing PDFs at people.
Forever alone, I guess. It's been a joy talking with you, Ben, not only about this, but just in general, because you always have something interesting and fascinating to say, and you're a nice guy.
Oh, thanks. It's so, been a pleasure.
Well, people really need to get off their butts and pay you for your product. So they need to go, and we'll have links in the show notes. Head on over to wargamingforums.com/96, WR96. That's wargamingforums.com/WR, the numbers 9 and 6. Links to everything, Troll in the Corner. Of course, we're a proud member. I love working with you on Troll in the Corner.
Thanks,
all
man.
Sorts of great stuff happens there. It really is the best way to kind of stay up to date on what, like, everyone is doing in Trolling Corner, not just mm-hmm. yourself and myself, but you mentioned Brent, and there's all these authors on there who are talking about wargaming and talking about board games and role-playing, everything. It's a great way to expand
Absolutely.
Your worldview. So you just got to get off your butt or get on your butt, I guess is the case. Go trollitc.com and just read all that stuff.
Yep, couldn't agree more.
Thank you very much for taking the time to be with us on this very special episode of Wargaming Recon. As we talked about at the start of the show, it is episode 96, 4 more to go to the big 100. And been talking about the 100th episode for a while, and people are going to be hearing very shortly in this episode the pre-recorded segment I do about getting me your gaming tips so I can put that into the 100th episode, because
nice.
I'm really hoping to get 100th community-generated, listener-generated, wargaming tips, things you love, things that are cool, things people should know, just stuff that you've learned in people's experiences of gaming, and just put all that stuff out for everyone. Make the 100th episode about everyone else. So each of these episodes that we get closer to 100, trying to have cool people on and special stuff happening. All sorts of other people have been on from episode 90 with Henry Hyde,
mm-hmm.
all the way up here now to you, Ben, and working our way ever closer to that wonderful 100, which I never thought would come. And someday, Indie Talks will also have an episode 100 and episode 50. And
oh, I'm sure. We'll get there.
500, and someday you will become the Dice Tower of Indie Talks kind
Yeesh.
Of stuff. With your whole network and videos, and
you
you'll
go.
Be able to empty the contents all over the
That's right, just like Tom Bassel does
like
in my
Tom
video
Bassel.
Reviews. Yeah.
Oh, he's such a nice guy. He really is.
Yeah, hey, you know, back to that networking thing. Hey, and if you are local to New England, come to Total Confusion in February. Jonathan will be there. I'll be there. A bunch of folks we probably both had on our shows will be there as well. I'm sure we'll be recording something this time around there. So come say hi. It's the best way to meet us and in person and game with us and whoop our asses in a game.
Absolutely. When I did my coverage of Total Con for 2013, I talked about one of the highlights being meeting my first listener who wasn't someone I already knew beforehand,
mm-hmm.
and just how awesome that was, and networking and spending time in it. And now the guy Patrick, he comes over for the game days at Wargaming
nice.
Recon Central, and like just all this cool stuff. And TotalCon 2014 is going to be really special because I have some cool stuff planned, and I know you do. And like you said, it's just a great way to meet some of the people who are putting out some of the games that you like and some of the stuff that's going on. And TotalCon, it's really easy to get to, and there's all sorts of ways to find out about it. But there's other conventions too. So if maybe you're not really into the whole role-playing tabletop sort of thing, maybe you're more focused on something else, just do some searching online because you're going to find whatever you're passionate about. There's a community out there, and they're getting together in person, and try to get there too so you can say, hey, I'm so-and-so, and it's nice to meet
Absolutely.
You, and just make those connections. Don't be someone just hanging out on that island in the corner by yourself. You got to come out and go into the room and don't be the wallflower, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, as always, we're going to shut down this episode with the usual catchphrase, because if I don't, I get feedback. Hey, way back in episode 42, you did it, but you swore you would always do it every episode, so you have to. It. How come you didn't? And do you ever get emails like that? Because it happens. It really does.
I never get emails like that, but I don't really have a catchphrase. Maybe I should develop one. That might be a good idea.
You could. Then you could be the next Superman or Batman.
There you go.
Or Buzz to infinity and beyond. So, as everyone knows, longtime listeners know, and new listeners, you're about to find out, we always close out these episodes of Wargaming Recon, whether they have a guest or not, of course, with the thanks and my appreciation for you taking the time to listen, and for Ben here coming on this episode, but to say that you have to remember, no matter what, you have to, just have to, you need to keep on gaming. The 100th episode of Wargaming Recon is quickly approaching, and I need you! I am looking for you to share your best wargaming tips, advice, hints, anything related to wargaming, and I'm hoping to get 100 of them. I want to share all of those on the 100th episode. So I'm asking for you to submit that information to me. Feel free to leave a voicemail at 347-470-4263 or send an email to cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. Please be sure to keep your tips brief, because I want to get as many of these in as I can so that the episode is not incredibly long. Try to keep them to one sentence. You can submit as many tips as you like, but there is a deadline. I need to receive your tips no later than midnight Eastern Standard Time on August 16th, 2013. That's Friday, August 16th, 2013, by midnight EST. So put your thinking caps on and get ready to share your favorite tips for best games, rules, how to make terrain, anything wargaming related, and send that info to me, Jonathan, at cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. Don't forget to include your name, and if you have a blog or podcast or some online presence, give me the name and the web address, because I want to make sure I give a shout out when I use your tip. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Cast, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Geeks Explicitly, new episodes coming at you every Thursday, talking about geek life. If you don't listen to Geeks Explicitly, then only at trollitc.com.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Hi, this is Tristan.
And this is Ben.
And this is Growing Geeks, a podcast where we talk about parenting as geeks
and use our skills to raise the next generation of awesome people.
We all started out as a ball of lightning. And we'll all end up as ammonium chlorine. And somewhere in between we'll rule the world. Yes, somewhere in we'll go down.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
If you heard it and you do like it, good. If you don't like it, what I'm supposed to do.